So yesterday we learned a bunch of things, and I'm gonna review them very briefly. But you know, they're very important things, very important facts about quantum mechanics. And so we have these two basic facts. The first one is that, so we have two types of objects, and they're both operators, but they are split in two categories. So we have states. So these are all Hermitian operators, okay? But states are positive Hermitian operators with trace one. And observables. And now I will just write an observable, a generic observable, in a basis. Well, let me actually use. So these are the matrix elements and cat bra. Now, all Hermitian operators can be diagonalized, and therefore they do admit the so-called spectral decomposition. In which you have the eigenvalues. And now, and a special basis of eigenvectors, as you know, like this. And we use this notation where PK, which is AK cat, AK bra, is a projector. Now, and the calligraphic A, K are the eigenvalues. And they are also the possible outcomes of an experiment. Every time you measure an observable, the outcome that you can get is only one of the AK. And this is a fact of nature, and we just accept that. It is important that since the states are also Hermitian operators, they also have a spectral decomposition. So psi, which in general will be written in any basis, will be written exactly like A, right? It will be something like this. But there will be a specific basis for psi, the basis in which it is diagonal, in which you can write it like this. And now you have some other projectors. So let me call this basis in which it is diagonal EK. Okay. So these are the eigenvalues of psi. Okay, so psi is an operator, so it has eigenvalues and eigenvectors. And notice that because of this, right, what is the trace of psi? The trace of psi, if you remember how to take the trace, is sum over k, pk, and now this cat bra, you turn it around, right? This is what the trace does sandwiches them in this way. But this is one, right? So we are just saying that the sum over k of pk is equal to one. So this pk are a probability distribution. Okay. So now we say that the state is pure. If and only if this probability distribution is extremal, means we have all zeros and a one somewhere. In other words, psi contains only one element in this spectral resolution. So it's a projector itself. Rank one projector. It's not only projector, but a rank one projector. Right? If I have to write this as a matrix, you see this is 0, 0, 0, 1, all zeros and zeros on the diagonal. This matrix has a rank one. And notice that this is true if and only if the sum of the pi square is equal to one. Right? The minute you don't have one and all zeros, but you have 0.8 and 0.2, the sum of the squares of this number is smaller than one. It's just a property of the powers. And of course, this can be written like the trace of psi square. Just for the sake of it, let's compute psi square. Psi square is, so what is psi square? It's psi times psi, right? So let me write it. So this means we have pk, and then we have ek, ek. And then I have to write psi again. So let me change index, PL, EL, EL. So now you see that here we get delta KL. I need a bit of space, I don't need this matrix here. So let me put it up here. So you agree that this is a delta KL, right? So this means that psi square is just the sum over k. Because of the delta, here I have a pk square. And now I have ek, ek. And now you see that the trace of psi square is just the sum of the pk square. Do you have questions? No? Okay. Okay. So this is what states and operators are. And what is the connection with experiments? The connection with experiments is that every time we measure A, the outcomes, as we said, are only the AI, but they come with a probability. The probability of getting AI is equal to the trace of the state in which you're making the measurement times the projector onto the corresponding eigenvector. This means that, for instance, if you want to compute the expectation value of A, well, what is going to be? It's going to be, you know, this is just statistics. It's the sum of the probability times the value. And as an exercise, you had to show that this is indeed equal to this. Notice that in the case psi is pure, then, which means it is equal to just this, as we said in the previous slide, then the expectation value of A turns out to be this, which is the object that you are used to. Now, why are we doing all this? Why we are going beyond just states the way you were used as vectors of norm one in the Hilbert space? Why we are promoting them as operators? This is, I actually don't know why this is not taught you know, in the usual course of quantum mechanics, because it's really necessary to do that. And the reason is the following. What happens after the measurement? Okay, so let me raise this. After the measurement. So in the textbook, what you learn is that, oh, if I go to the outcome AI, then I am in the state AI. But this is what you learn. But this is weird because it contains this word, if I got AI. What does it mean? Right? So what is the state after the measurement? What does it physically mean to say, oh, if I got AI, then I am in the eigenvector AI. So what it really means is that because there is no if, I got AI with the probability AI, then it means that I am in this state with the probability AI. So the very fact of measuring creates a probability distribution over the states in which your system is to be found. So we cannot say, oh, we are in this state. We can only say we are in this state with this probability. And as we have just learned, your initial state after the measurement, now, psi, regardless whether it's pure or non-pure, you can imagine that you start with a pure state, then measure A, and now it is in this state with this probability, which we have learned, we write it as so you see, even if you start with a pure state, as soon as you make a measurement, and we definitely want to make measurement, right? It's part of the very conceptual scheme of quantum mechanics, then you are in a mixed state. Somebody, okay, I have, please don't use the chat because I'm not able to see everything. So if you have a question, I'm very happy to answer, but do not use the chat. Interrupt me, unmute yourself, speak up. Okay. Okay, is this clear? So you see that the act of measurement immediately changes the purity of the state, right? Because we said that we start with a pure state, measure, and we get in psi prime, I'm just rewriting what I wrote before, which is these probabilities times this pk. Remember where pk is equal ak, ak, and the probability of AI is the trace of psi pk. So after the measurement, we are in sum over k, trace of psi pk, pk. And this is quantum mechanics. So your state changes. This is sometimes called collapse of the wave function. And it's due to the fact that before measurement, Psi gives you some amplitudes that are, you know, that are a statement about what potentially can happen to your physical system. But after you measure it, this potentiality has become, it's not potential anymore. Something has happened. And if something has happened, now, you know, the new potentialities must be updated. You can see it that way.
Psi, I have one question, if I may.
Yeah.
So the way I understand it, this density matrix formulation allows us to encode our uncertainty about the state of our particles. Now, you're saying that after a measurement, we're left with an impure or a mixed state. But surely if we know what value we measured, we know what state each of the particles has collapsed into. And so aren't we still certain about the new state?
That's correct. So what? That's very correct. So this means this, that how do we have a state? So the because we are talking about probabilities, this means that we are repeating the measurement many times. So in the end, you are left with an ensemble always, which is described by this.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that makes complete sense. Thank you.
Now, but let me get to your point, because your comment is very important. Now, of course, in this ensemble, I can make a refinement. I can select only some of the outcomes. But refinement means, again, to do something, right? It means to discard some of the outcomes. So this is another quantum operation in which, again, the purity is changing. In fact, you can use it to purify the system. For instance, I can select just one specific outcome, right? The outcome k equal k tilde. And if you select that outcome, now your state is just p k tilde, and that's it with probability one. So you can purify again the state.
Right, yeah, I understand.
But that's an operation, something that you have to do. The measurement returns you, because you have to repeat it many, many times, always returns you an ensemble. It's the very fact that quantum mechanics is a probabilistic theory that after the measurement, we must have an ensemble of outcomes. Okay. Do you have questions on this? Okay. Now.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Yeah, so, like, I think that the psi prime which you wrote is just the representation of psi in the basis vectors of A, right?
Mm-hmm. But that's the psi after the measurement.
Yeah, but then they're essentially the same vectors, right? It's just a representation in some other basis.
Oh, no, this is a great question. Oh, I like this question very much. So let's start with our psi, okay? Before measurement.
Okay.
This is really an amazing question. Thank you. So, and just for the sake of it, imagine that psi before measurement is pure.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. But definitely I can represent it as a density matrix, and I can write it in the basis of A. So far, so good. Do you understand how this comes about?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, because psi, you are used to see it in this way, right? So you have some amplitudes and some basis is the basis of AI. And now if I have psi psi, which is the density matrix for a pure state, it's gonna be equal to IL. Now you have alpha I, alpha star L, AI, AL. And this is what I called psi IL. So far so good.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, generally, so look at this matrix. Do I have off diagonal elements or not?
Yeah.
Okay. After measurement in A, psi, psi prime becomes, and now you have these objects that are the trace of psi A, psi A, pk.
So it's a superposition of states which are eigenvectors of the observable.
So you see also here, these are eigenvectors, but this matrix are off diagonal elements.
Yeah.
But after measurement in that basis, this is it is diagonal in that basis.
Yeah, okay.
And this is this is very, it's actually the essence of quantum mechanics. So you see, at the beginning, your state is in a coherent superposition. So these matrix elements are called coherences. This means that you have all these cool things that quantum mechanics does, like interference. But after measurement, the state is incoherent. It's just in a classical mixture of these outcomes. There is no interference anymore. After you measured, you cannot interfere anymore. It has decohered. If you measure that observable, of course, if you change observable, then you're basically changing basis and you get off diagonal elements again. So this thing sometimes is hidden in the textbooks, and we are so used, you know, we start studying physics, we do physics one, physics two, classical mechanics and relativity. And all we learn is why we use vectors, because the basis doesn't matter, right? The basis is material, it's just a reference frame. And in quantum mechanics, the basis is all that matters.
Yeah.
Right? Because the basis is the eigenbasis of an observable, so which is what you are looking at. And depending on what you're looking at, you get interference or not. So the results of your experiment do depend on what you look at. And this is basically the great change in quantum mechanics. Because some observables are diagonal in a basis, like this, right? So there is no interference. But in another basis, they become off diagonal. If all the observables were diagonal in the same basis, it would mean that they all commute. And then it's not quantum mechanics anymore. Quantum mechanics means there are incompatible observables. Right? So if you look at one, you screw up the other, because you end up in the eigenbasis of this, which means that now you are not in the eigenbasis of the other one. So you get indeterminacy. Okay. So you see that these things, I know that it's a bit to digest here, but actually they're much clearer if you cast quantum mechanics directly in the operator formalism, which is what Heisenberg did. And quantum information is pretty much a way of thinking the way Heisenberg did. Is this is a theory about how the outcomes of our experiments behave, and taking seriously the fact the outcomes of our experiments show that different observables may be incompatible. Whereas thinking of the wave function, you know, as this vector, in, you know, that is the system, is at the same time the source of a lot of philosophical discussion, and hides some of the properties of quantum mechanics, or at least makes them, conceals them a little bit. All right. Okay. So we know, so we learned something, that measurement changes the purity. We will find an exercise for today, which is about this thing. It is, okay, given a basis, what is the operation that takes some operator X, which in this basis will have some diagonal elements and some off diagonal elements. So we must have some operation, let me call it a D, that erases the off diagonal elements. So this is called defacing. And you have just seen that measurement is a defacing operation. But it's exactly what it does. But more generally, mathematically, how we write this operation. So there is a problem today to do about this. But what else? I have another question. What else changes the purity? And let me write this magic word, entanglement. So how many of you are already familiar with the notion of entanglement? Besides, you know, I'm sure you all have heard of it with things like, okay, so this is a phrase that I'm writing now and then must never be uttered again. Okay, so now I erase this phrase, you will never say it again. This is the language of Mordor. No, you don't say that. There is no action at a distance. But what is entanglement? Entanglement is this. First of all, we need to introduce a notion of here and there. Okay, so this means that we are talking of a composite system. Maybe it's made of two parts, A and B, or maybe it's made of many parts, but it's not just one system. It's at least, it is at least two systems. And for the sake of this, of simplicity, I will stick to this, okay? A system made of two parts. And the mathematical structure to do this is the so-called tensor product. And I would like to take questions about the tensor product now before I go ahead, because now I'm gonna use it. Okay. So now I have a question. Okay, imagine that I have an operator A that is an operator on the, that has this as a domain. Okay, it belongs to the set of bounded operators on HA. So this means that, you know, for instance, this is your system A, and you are measuring something like the spin. Okay, so let me imagine that our HA at the beginning was the only system that we had. Oh, it's two states. And then I have some operator, which is, let me write it, some matrix elements. And now I have the state I's and the state J. And you see that I and J go from 0 to 1. Example. Right? It must be a 2x2 matrix, as you can see from the from here, from this. Okay. And so definitely this means how I'm measuring this spin. Then somewhere else in the world, there is another spin, which is the span of other two states that I also call 0 and 1. Now, one should be careful and put A here and B here. And, you know, then we drop it because the notation becomes cumbersome, but this is what it means. The tensor product says, oh, a basis for the whole H, which is the union, if you wish, but I should say the tensor product of these two spaces is the span of four states that are all the possible combinations. So 0A, 0B, and so on and so forth, but this is more elegant. So the first one is A, the second one is B. Okay. So now, if I have an operator, my operator A before, okay, remember, belonged to, and this is a domain. Now mathematically, since my system, my space is this, I need to generalize this operator, right? What does it become? Does anyone have an idea?
Is it A tensor the identity?
Very good. So now I will call it, let me call it A tilde. A tilde is the old A tensor, the identity on B. This is the identity operator on B. This is natural generalization. So when I have some state psi, which is now a state in H, and I want to make a measurement only on this part of the system, well, this measurement has the operator that I'm measuring as this form. Does it make sense? So now, for instance, if I want to know the expectation value of A, this is going to be equal to the trace of A psi. We know that. But on the other hand, this should be also equal to the trace of A tilde and the state, let me call it psi A, where psi A only belongs to HA. And now the question is, what is psi A? And one of the problems of yesterday was to solve this equation and find out what is psi A. And you learned that psi A is nothing else but you take psi and you do a partial trace. So you trace out only B. Have you done this problem? Can I assume you know what this means, or would you rather me explain that? Okay. So if you have no preference, I will assume that you know what this means. So, okay, so this is a local measurement, right? So psi A represents the state psi locally. And now let's make some examples. So imagine that my initial state, psi, was a pure state. Let's say that on A, we had some superposition. And on B, we had, say, one. It's just an example. Let's compute psi A. So I do a compute psi A. So what I will do is that, first of all, okay, I have to do this, right? So first of all, I have to compute psi, which is the density matrix. And this density matrix is this object, which is a cat, right? This is a cat, times the same object, and I make it a bra, so I take the dagger, tensor, so, and this part lives on A, right? Tensor, one, the cat, one, the bra. Remember what tracing means. Means getting a cat bra and transforming it in a bracket. But I'm only tracing B. So it means that when I take the trace of B, this becomes 1, 1, which is 1. Right? These are orthonormal bases. So I'm left with psi A being, now let me write it explicitly.
But that is a separable state, right?
That's a separable state. I'm doing this example. That's a separable state.
But for mixed states, we cannot compute that like that, right?
Yeah, so one thing at a time. The way we compute the trace is always the same. In this case, it's easier because the state is both pure and separable. Being pure and being separable are two independent concepts. But my question is, after I've taken this trace, is this state, and I want you to answer, you guys, is this state pure or not? Any idea? So look at it. In view of the things that we have said.
I would say it's not, because it's a non-trivial convex combination of
ketras. Okay, let's try, okay? So, for the sake of notation, allow me to call this vector the vector ket plus. Okay? So this means that my state is this. And this also means that psi square is this, which is this. And the trace of psi square is going to be how you take the trace, bracket becomes ketbra. So it's pure. And now you can generalize this example. You can do it as an exercise. If I take a pure separable state, so this means is some state on A times some state on B, and you trace out B, you get again a pure state. The proof is elementary. You should really do that, you know, as first thing when we finish this. You just need to follow the same steps that I followed here. So a pure separable state, locally, still pure. Okay, now let's make another example. Okay, let our initial state have the form 0, 1, plus 1, 0, over square root of 2. Is this state pure?
Yes.
Yes, the very fact that it's a ket means it's pure. Impure states cannot be represented as a ket. So this one is pure. If I'd written already said as a density matrix, it would not be possible to see it by inspection. How would we know? Well, we would compute this and check whether it's one. Right. Okay. So let me compute this density matrix. So bear with me. So now we have 0, 1, 0, 1, right? Plus 0, 1, 1, 0. Plus 1, 0, 0, 1. Plus 1, 0, 1, 0. Do we agree this is the density matrix? Okay, and now let's trace out B, which means we sandwich together only the second one. So you see, on the first qubit, we leave it unchanged. And the second qubit, we sandwich. And let's do it also here. So the first qubit is unchanged. And the second qubit is 1, 0. And let's go ahead. Now we have 1, 0, 0, 1 plus 1, 1, 0, 0. Now you can see that these two terms cancel because these are orthogonal states. Whereas these two terms are just one. And we are left with 1/2, 0, 0 plus 1/2, 1, 1. Oh, and now you see this is not a ket. But even if, let's say we don't want to do it by inspection because, you know, inspection can be misleading. Mind that this 0, 0, and 1, 1 are on A, right? Which makes sense because psi A is an operator on HA. So let's compute the purity of this. Well, the purity, you can either do it with, you know, writing psi A times psi A and then you take the trace, or you remember that this is equal to this, right? We proved it before. What are these probabilities of this and this? And this is a spectral decomposition. So this is 1/4 plus 1/4, which is 1/2, which is not one, it's smaller than one, not pure. So tracing out, sometimes changes the purity. And this is a very, very important fact of quantum mechanics. It can only happen in quantum mechanics.
Sorry, so, is that because the original state was not separable?
Yes. In fact, we take this as a definition. We say that if the reduced state is still pure, then the original state was a pure separable state. But if the original state, but if the marginal state, the local state, is non-pure, then the original pure state was entangled. And this is what entanglement is. Entanglement is the property of the fact that a state that is pure, which means it has some statistical properties, when you look at it locally, becomes non-pure. So this is what entanglement is. Is not spooky action at a distance. It's the fact that if you trace out one part of the system, which means, oh, I measured something, so now, you know, if I measure on B, it's like tracing out, now I have something left on A. And we know that when you measure something, your state has to change because something that was only potential has actually happened. So your new ideas about what potentially can happen have to change. But this is not action. This is an update of your probabilities, of your potentialities. And this has nothing to do with action at a distance. Right? So do you all know the story about the Bergman's socks? Okay. So there was this physicist that for some reason he was never able to pair his socks. He would always wear one sock of one color and another sock of the other color. You just wouldn't know which one. And so imagine that this physicist has very long legs, you know, so that when he takes a step, he has this very wide gait, and therefore his feet are very well separated. And then, you know, you look at one of his socks. So at the beginning, you know, before anything, you say, I think the sock on the right foot is 1/2 probability white, 1/2 probability black. Okay. Now you look at the left foot, okay, you trace out one part of the system, and you see that it's white. Now you immediately learn something about the sock on the right foot, at a distance, if you wish. But of course, right? It's probability theory, it's not action. So that's why those words shall never be said again. Because quantum mechanics is a probabilistic theory, measurements means that something that was only potential has become actual, so the probabilities change. And probability can change over a distance, you know, normally, as you know. You are not surprised that knowing the sock on the left tells you something on the sock on the right. You would not say it's spooky action at a distance. Okay. Good. All right. So we learned a bunch of things. So I think, so typically right now I should leave you and you should start working on some problems, but I feel like we should go ahead a little bit because we are just started rolling. It's kind of interesting. Why don't we continue a little bit? Do you agree? Great. Okay. So far, I only told you half of the story because I told you we have states, we have measurements, okay? And what can happen? Something is missing here, and it's missing the fact that in physics, we are not just given with established situations we want to make measurements, but there are interactions, right? So when you start to study physics, the first thing you studied was, okay, you have a ball that is rolling on an inclined plane and it's rolling. Something is going on because there is gravity. And so the next thing to learn about quantum mechanics is time evolution. And time evolution is modeled, you know that there is some Hamiltonian, right? Some Hamiltonian that is also an Hermitian operator. It represents energy. Now you have the Schrödinger equation and all of that. But we don't need to write the Schrödinger equation. What we need to write is, if we know the Hamiltonian of the system, you can take this as a postulate of quantum mechanics. States will evolve in time. So the Hamiltonian generates the time evolution in this way. And not only states evolve in time. States are operators, so source operators evolve in time. And the only difference between states and observables, they're both operators, but we let the operators evolve by definition, so or by postulate, with the dagger of it. Mathematically, well, I'll go to the math in a second. Okay, is this clear? So, and the reason why we require this property is that when you compute the expectation value of the observable A in psi of t, sorry, let me write it like this. When you compute the observable as a function of time, of the expectation value of this observable, you could imagine that, okay, I have this observable, but the state is changing. Or you could say, hey, I have some state, but the observable is changing. And you will notice that because of this definition, this is an identity. I think you are familiar with this. And you probably learned this as a Schrödinger representation and Heisenberg representation. Now, every time you take the exponential with the I of an Hermitian operator, this becomes a unitary operator. And I know you know this. Unitary means so from now on, I will just talk about unitary operators, forgetting from what Hamiltonian they come from. Okay. And mathematically, look at this. This is calligraphic U. We will write this thing. So this is the time evolution of X, right? And this is another notation. So this type of action, which you sandwich something between two operators, is called the adjoint action. And this is another way of writing it. Sometimes another notation is just this. But remember, it means this. This is the definition. Okay. Now, a very important property of unitary evolution, which is the subject of several problems today, is that it's norm preserving. What does it mean? That if I take the norm of UX, so the norm of X after I've evolved it, this is equal to the norm of X. And this is extremely, extremely, extremely important. And one consequence of this is that this is also a problem. Purity and entanglement if you remember the formula that we had about entanglement, remember that entanglement was this, right? So it's the log of some kind of purity. Purity is just alpha equal 2. So purity, entanglement, these functions, all these functions.
Pardon, so, sorry?
What?
When you say entanglement, did you mean entropy, perhaps?
Yeah, entanglement entropy, yes. The von Neumann entropy or the Rényi entropy in general.
Okay, are those also called entanglement?
Yes.
Okay.
So these are all measurements of entanglement. So this means you have a state psi that belongs to this Hilbert space. This is pure. Okay. When we talk about entanglement, so entanglement in mixed states is an extremely difficult matter. So we, from now on, when we talk about entanglement, we will reason in this way. We start with a pure state. And then we look at psi A, and we look if this one is mixed or not. If it's mixed, then S alpha of psi A is gonna be greater than zero. If this is still pure, it will be zero. And this is the entropy, the entanglement entropy is a measure of entanglement. So as I said, entanglement is the property that a partial state is not pure anymore. And the more impurities we say, the more entangled it was. But now a consequence of this thing is that whatever psi is, okay, so it can have some entanglement. But now you evolve it in time, and you compute a new entanglement, they must be the same. Sorry, not the entanglement, the entropy. So this is the full state. So you have a full state, could be mixed or pure. So this thing, if it's pure, this is zero. If it's not pure, it's non-zero. Anyway, whatever this is, if you evolve it in time, then its entropy is conserved. Entropy is conserved. And now you see that here we immediately see that there is some trouble, because if there is one thing that is always true, is that in time, entropy increases. No, this is the second law of thermodynamics. And remember, our point of view is that the laws of thermodynamics are the most structural laws of physics. In fact, they are the only laws that have never been updated. We have changed all the laws of physics. We have, you know, oh, energy is not conserved. Yeah, it's the four energy that is conserved, right? It's not the momentum that is conserved. It's the four momentum that is conserved. We have changed our definition of space and time. We've changed our definition of even what is a particle with the advent of quantum mechanics. But we have never changed the laws of thermodynamics because they're more fundamental than the other ones. And in time, entropy always increases. But I just showed you, or actually I just claimed that it's part of an exercise, that U preserves entropy. And in classical mechanics, you have a similar theorem. Do you remember what theorem is that? So in classical mechanics, right, you have a phase space. And now entropy means that you don't know exactly where your system is. So it's some cloud. And the volume of this cloud is basically the entropy, right? Somehow. And now you evolve it in time. So this thing changes.
Liouville
theorem. So entropy is constant. So that's very interesting. We have two fundamental theories of nature, classical mechanics and quantum mechanics, that say entropy never increases. But if there is one thing that is true, is that entropy always increases. So this is the problem of statistical mechanics. How come you have a microscopic equations of the motion that are time reversal? So there is no arrow of time. But in nature, there is obviously an arrow of time. That's why we talk about time. So one of the goals of this course is to show you how we think of this problem, how we think we have at least partially solved this problem in the context of quantum mechanics, especially using quantum information. Another interesting thing, I'm sure you have heard things about chaos. So what is chaos? You know, the butterfly effect. Is this fact that, oh, you know, in a chaotic system, you have, so this again, my phase space. If you have two initial conditions that are very close by, and they evolve in time, these trajectories diverge. So that's why you can't really predict anything, because systems are very sensitive to initial conditions. This trajectory diverge in this way. This lambda is called the outcome of exponent, and this is called chaos. And this is somehow used to saying, to explain why, in spite of the Liouville theorem, you still can have an increase of entropy. All these explanations are very complicated and very shaky, but they're based on this. But in quantum mechanics, let's see what happens. Okay? Imagine that we have two different initial conditions, psi 1 and psi 2, but they're very similar. Okay? They're nearby. Which means that the overlap of psi 1 and psi 2 is almost 1. This is a very small number, epsilon. Okay. And now we say, okay, let's evolve psi 1. I'm doing it in the pure state case, but it's exactly the same in the non-pure case. Okay, so this is psi 1 of t. And let's evolve psi 2 with the same dynamics, just like in this example. And now I have psi 2 of t. And let's compute now the overlap. Let's see how close they are, these two states, as a function of time. Well, this is psi 1, u dagger, u psi 2. And this is the identity, so it's just the initial one. It's conserved. The distance of states is conserved by unitary evolution. So there is no chaos. So there is no high sensitivity to the initial conditions in quantum mechanics. So this thing about the fact that entropy increases becomes mysteriouser and mysteriouser. And okay, so I leave you here. I want to mention just one thing that is important for the exercises. One of the problems is about, it's a trick to compute purity. And basically you have to show that this can be computed in this way. So I just want to explain what are the terms of the problem. So psi belongs to some Hilbert space H. Now I can do a trick. I do what's called a replica. Means that I make a copy of psi. So I do psi tensor psi, that now belongs, this is an abuse of notation. This is an operator, so I should say the bounded operators on H. But allow me to abuse this one notation. So this is belongs to two copies of the Hilbert space. Okay, right. I've just copied the state. I can copy a given, a known state, so I can do that. And now, let me introduce this operator. It's called T2. It's a permutation operator of order 2. What does it do? So let's say that I have a basis here, I, and now I have the same basis here, because this is just a copy. Let me call it J. It's the same vectors, but I need to use different indexes, right? So T2, so you know that IJ is a basis in H tensor H, is what we mean by tensor product. So T2 on IJ just swaps JI. So a trick to compute this is to compute this as the trace of this operator T2 that I've defined in this way, right? Because once I tell you how a linear operator acts on the basis states, I told you everything. You know this from linear algebra. So T2 psi tensor psi. So this is one of the exercises. And then there is another exercise, which is, okay, imagine that I have a psi that belongs to HA, so the tensor HB. And now I want the purity. So let's say that this one is pure. But now when I look at psi A, this may be not pure. So this means that I want to compute this one. And one of the exercises says, oh, can I write this as the trace of some operator that you need to understand times just the full psi two copies? So this is another problem.